Many of us are looking forward to that day when we finish our working life and settle into retirement. And I don't know, that dream might include fishing or gardening or reading and knitting or maybe volunteering, spending lots of time with the grandkids. Others enjoy their work so much they want to work as long as possible. In any case, all of us want to be sure to have funds to do what we want, when we want, in our later years. Hi, Larry Mueller here. So glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. Frank Armstrong with us today is a certified financial planner, founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc. He is the author of The Informed Investor and co-author of Save Your Retirement. Been a regular on our show for many years now and with us by phone today. Frank, great to have you back on the show.
Always a pleasure, Larry.
I really appreciate it. I think there's a misconception that retirement planning is only for people with a lot of money, the wealthy. How do you answer that?
Not true. I don't think anybody really looks forward to existing on simply Social Security. In the old days, we had a corporate retirement plan, and we had our own savings, and then we had Social Security. And I don't think Social Security should be, for most people, the only thing they're going to count on.
Yeah, absolutely. I should give the number for people to join in. You may have a question about your retirement. Did you save for retirement? How are you doing on that? 1-800-642-1234, your number to call. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. How do we know, or maybe I can say, how can we calculate how much we actually need to save for retirement?
There's a lot of great calculators on the internet that'll do the math for you. Essentially, you probably wouldn't want to have any less than 85% of your final earnings as an income. I don't think it's realistic to say that you're going to retire at half or a quarter of your income needs. And many people find they need 125% because they want to travel and do things they've deferred for a long time. So you have to determine what your final average earnings might be. Take some number like 85% of that, and then how much capital do you need to get there? I suggest that you multiply the annual income that you're going to need by 25 to determine what kind of capital you'll need to generate that. That's a 4% withdrawal rate from your nest egg.
Okay. So
it's a lot of money. I mean, you need $40,000 a year, that means you need $1 million.
Yeah.
And the sooner you start to plan and start to save for that, the better your chances of getting there.
Yeah. How do most people finance their retirement? I know there's a range of strategies to choose from.
Well, you know, the 401k's become the default strategy, but I think we have including 401k's, we almost have a negative savings rate across the entire country. It's probably gone up to 2% now after the crash because people got scared straight. But you can't retire on a 2% savings rate ever. So, it's a problem. Across the entire spectrum, not enough people are saving enough money to even get close.
Yeah. But those 401ks could work?
401ks are a good means if the costs are reasonable and the investment choices are reasonable. And whatever you do, whether it's a 401k, an IRA, or whatever, you have to have the discipline to actually save. A 401k is probably one of the best ways to get that discipline because it's automatic. If the money goes before it goes through your checking account or your bank, hopefully it's out of sight, out of mind, and grows over a period of time to help you get to your retirement goal.
Yeah. Megan in Madison is online with us. Megan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. This relates to what you were just talking about. I'm 28. I'm starting a new job, and they offer 401k matching. I also have a Roth IRA, and I'm wondering what sort of percentages I should contribute to either of them, or one is more important than the other.
You'd have to evaluate your 401k to determine if it's worth investing in. At the bottom of all your considerations, a 401k is an investment plan. If it's a crummy investment plan, then the tax deferral that you get from it is probably not worthwhile. And you have an opportunity to put away $5,000 or so in an IRA every year, where you know you can go to some place like Vanguard, get extremely low costs, diversify around the world, and have a very high quality investment portfolio. So at your age, unless you're making megabucks, the IRA might be a good choice. But the one thing you've got to do is actually save. And the 401k is a saving mechanism that's automatic for you, and that's worth something.
And then there's the benefit of the company. How much does the company match?
I need to look into it.
You wouldn't want to give up free money in the company match if there is a match. Many firms don't have a match at all. And so, you know, it's just a pure out of your own pocket. Some of them have very generous contributions that don't require a match at all. And the vast majority of them require some kind of a contribution from you to get the company match.
So if you get the maximum on the match and then go with the other, you might
be. Well, it may be. 401ks can be extremely good.
Yeah.
But, you know, they vary in quality, and you have to take it upon yourself to read the disclosure information you get, look at the costs, look at the benefits, and make that determination individually.
Yeah. Good luck, Megan.
Okay, thank you.
Got the right mindset. I can tell that. Diane in Pulaski, it's your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
I'm almost kind of embarrassed to say this, but I'm almost 50 years old, and I haven't started saving anything. What do I do?
Well, do you have a 401k at work?
No.
No. Well, you have IRAs, and you have a spouse?
No.
Okay. No? Okay. Well, you can put away a bunch of money in an IRA, including your normal and your match, and that's a good place to start.
Okay.
But it might not be enough to get you to your goal, and so you have to set a savings goal that you're comfortable with and that you can maintain. If it's more than what you can put into an IRA or a Roth IRA, go to Vanguard and just get their index funds, very low tax cost. In an index fund, and extremely efficient and widely diversified.
Yeah, and we should mention that you're not associated or hired by Vanguard or anything like that.
But you know, if anybody on Wall Street deserves a white hat reputation, it's Vanguard.
Yeah,
and you know, we use predominantly the other approach would be to use some of the lower cost exchange traded funds. We use some institutional funds that retail investors can't get that work very well in our portfolios, but I don't mention them on air too much because you can't get them.
Okay.
But Vanguard has my highest level of respect. Oh,
there we go. Diane, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
So the time to start, by the way, is today, or as quickly as you can.
It is, because, you know, Larry, the longer you have before you retire, the more time is on your side. And the compound, and every day you delay means that you've got to come out of your own pocket more, and less of your retirement benefit is going to come from your accumulated earnings. So delay is a really costly thing. And as you get closer to retirement, time becomes the enemy. At retirement, you now have no more time to save, so start early.
In her case, she's 50. She still has 15, maybe 20 years of saving and could still come up with a pretty nice nest egg.
You can get a very nice nest egg in 15 or 20 years, but you know, you have to exercise the discipline to get there.
Yeah.
And you have to adjust your budget, and you have to decide what's important. Because there's always another iPhone to buy, or another iPad, and it feels good to get that iPad today, and retirement is still 15 years away, and it doesn't seem quite so important, and you in your mind set priorities that are closer in, and it's a big psychological problem for most people.
Let's turn to Dan in Rhinelander next. Dan, hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, hello. My question is, you keep hearing about you should wait till later, like 67, to get the maximum for your Social Security check. And, you know, by my calculations, the break-even point would be at age 82 for me, to where it would, you know, catch up to what you would get between 62 and 67. And I'm not sure why we keep hearing this when a person, you know, your quality of life at 62 should be much more better than at 82. And if you've worked 50 years, you know, you might just want to take it earlier and enjoy your life and worry about it at 82.
I agree in part and disagree in part. It's an individual decision. The part I disagree with is the break-even analysis, which is pretty simplistic. For many people who don't necessarily need the money now, delaying is a good thing, because between 66 and 70, your benefit goes up at 8% compounded per year, and that's pretty good. The other nice thing about that is that if you're married, your spouse gets a much higher, and you delay, your spouse, her survivor benefit is a much higher benefit than if you start taking it early. It's not a simple decision. There are quality of life and economic decisions that may override a simple 8% increase, but it's something you have to think through very carefully.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Dan, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in as well with your questions and comments. I have open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org as well with questions, or go online to my Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. When you call, you're going to hear from Judith Cyrus-Poisson, our producer, who is back from a week's vacation and looking pretty chipper and I think happy to be back. I'm Larry Miller with our guest today, Frank Armstrong, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking about planning successfully for retirement. Larry Miller here, my guest Frank Armstrong. Frank's a certified financial planner, founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc., and is the author of a couple books, The Informed Investor, and also co-author of Save Your Retirement. I certainly advise you, or hope you'll take a look at his Facebook page. I think we have a link to it. There's a lot of great information there about saving and investing, and free right there for you to take advantage of. And I hope you'll take a look at it. There's a lot there. Frank, you keep updating that a little bit too.
That's right. We're revising the website to make things easier to find, but we have over 500 articles posted there on various topics of financial planning, investment planning, retirement planning, and I hope people will use it as a resource. We think it's a pretty decent library for you.
Yeah, I would agree. Vincent in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. Hi.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I am 49 years old. I have a 401 with my company. They do a 25% matching. And currently I have about $265,000 in the 401k. Now, the key question I have is that I really don't follow it, per se, on what funds they are. And am I just being naive, or is it about time I get more involved in where the money's going to?
I think it's about time you got involved. You got to own your retirement, and you have to determine the appropriate level of risk and the diversification. It's up to you. Unfortunately, in the old days, my father showed up for work reasonably often, reasonably sober, and at the end of 30 years, they gave him a gold watch and a lifetime income, and that don't happen anymore. So right now, we've shifted all the responsibility to make appropriate investment decisions and to actually fund a lot of the retirement to the individual, and so you've got to own it. If you don't, you've got nobody to blame but yourself. And unfortunately, we don't want to blame the victim, But the rules have changed, and it's this is the kinder, gentler society. And it's not, and that was that's a cruelty joke.
Well, how does, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I have no experience in this. How do I evaluate my 401k?
Well, the government required disclosure to all the participants of a plan, which you should have already received, that should give you some information on costs. Unfortunately, the disclosure itself is so voluminous that you may not want to wade through it. But you need to do an analysis of what the total costs of the investments are in the plan, and whether they're properly diversified, and if you can match your goals for risk, time horizon, and growth objectives with the plan's funds. And so, unfortunately, it just takes a little effort. But, in this case, failure is not an option because you don't want to be in your 80s eating cat food.
No. Nope.
Actually, cat food's kind of expensive.
yeah, it is, as a matter of fact. There you go, Vince. Thanks very much for calling. Shannon in Jefferson, Wisconsin. Hello. Let's see here. Get him on. There we go. Hi, Shannon. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I was calling. My husband and I are both in our mid-40s, and we have two teenagers that will be going to college in the next 3 and 4 years. And we've not saved for their college money in any way, but we have saved over $200,000 in our retirement account.
Yep.
And we have well over $200,000 in equity in our home. We just have a very small mortgage that should be paid off here in the next 4 years. So I'm at the point of really seriously thinking about how I can help them get through college financially, and I'm not sure if there's a way that we can borrow from our retirement accounts or take money from there to help them, or using student loans. I guess that's my question.
Well, it's a complicated subject. There are a lot of institutions that give high levels of financial aid. And so even though you might see a shocking number for annual tuition, needy students and good students may get almost all of it or, paid. And then there's military academies, which I think provide a very good education if you're so inclined. And maybe you need to take 2 years in a community college. It's very difficult to answer the other part of your question. It's difficult to get money out of a retirement plan without big tax penalties. It's sort of a carrot and a stick approach. They want you to save for retirement, but they don't want you to take it out. We saw the implications of massive borrowing against our homes recently, and it didn't turn out well. But you do have a few years where you can contribute now, and you can use 529 plans, or various states have prepaid tuition plans that are really pretty neat because you pay the discounted value of the tuition in the future. And it's guaranteed by the states if your state has one of those.
Okay. They're
transferable so that if your child decides he wants to go to Florida instead of Illinois, he's got a chance to take that money and do that. There's also something called a Coverdell IRA that allows you to put money away into an IRA type investment that's tax-free when you withdraw it for school. So there's a lot of options available to you, but again, it's a matter of you got to have the discipline to save. But
sure.
Really look into what kind of tuition assistance or financial assistance is available, because there are a lot of very high-quality colleges that give massive amounts of tuition assistance to needy children.
Yeah,
would it make sense to stop, say, for the next 8 years to stop putting into our individual IRAs and retirement accounts? We're putting about 10% of our income in there. and to redirect that towards college for the.
You know what you could do is you could invest into Roth IRAs, and then at the end of when you need to take it out for your children, the what you've put in comes out tax free. The earnings would be taxable before age 59 and a half, but let's say you put in $5,000 a year into a Roth IRA, and you did that for 4 years. There'd be $20,000 you could withdraw, and hopefully it's grown to say $30,000, $35,000. The other 15 that's left, the 10 or 15 that we just talked about, can go on and compound until you retire, and that's a very good mixed. A mixed opportunity, so you can fund education and fund retirement the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to really be careful about. I think I've heard you say this, right? You know, giving away your own retirement for the kids isn't necessarily a great idea.
No, it's not, and you don't want to become dependent on them, and their worst nightmare is for to become part of the sandwich generation where they've got kids and they've got parents to support. So you have to be very careful about that, but there are alternatives. Student loans are perhaps the worst if you can work around any of that. Unfortunately, education is expensive. But ignorance is even more expensive,
right?
And the trade-offs are sometimes pretty brutal. I know I have a friend that's a PhD candidate. She's going to graduate with $250,000 worth of debt. Mm-hmm. That's just inconceivable to me.
Yeah. So there you go, Shannon. Thank you for calling. Good luck. Yeah, appreciate it very much. Roger in Palatine, Illinois, on to you now.
Okay, I'm 68 years old, and I have a house that will be paid for in 5 years, and now my wife wants a divorce. She doesn't want to sell the house and split the proceeds. She wants me to refinance the house for 30 years and give her a lump sum check. It feels very dangerous for me to do that. You know, what she wants, give her a lump sum check, and then, you know, instead of spending my years enjoying my retirement, which I haven't had much of a retirement yet, a lot of problems coming up all the time. So I don't like this idea of refinancing the house, but that's what she wants to do. She wants a lump sum check so she can go buy herself a house. I think we should put the house up for sale and split the proceeds, but it would probably take a year or two to sell the house, and the house needs some work. So that's my question.
Boy, that's a tough one.
That is a tough one. I tend to agree with you that a big mortgage at your stage in life would be a real drag, whereas if you sold the house and divided the proceeds, that should be fair in most courts. Most courts would believe that's fair, but believe me, that's a nightmare. That if you can't work it out between yourselves, the courts will work it out for you, and the whole thing is going to be painful and horribly expensive. But you know, for me, I wouldn't want to be picking up a huge debt at this stage in my life in a house that. You know, could be sold and at least get some kind of a fresh start.
Yeah. Yep. There you go.
I want to move to Wisconsin anyway and be a beekeeper. That was my dream of retirement.
Well, there you go. I think you've probably answered your own question, Roger.
I think you did too. I think you're on the right track if you can work it out with your spouse. You know, it's a series of painful decisions at this point in life.
Yeah, yes, it is. And
but
good.
I wish you well.
Good luck. Let me know how this all turns out, will you, Roger? I would appreciate it. David in Waukesha, thank you for calling. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple parts to my question. I have I've been retired for 4 years, and I wanted to share a couple of websites that have really helped me learn about the investment and money details. And also I have a question about IRAs that I'd like to ask.
Yeah.
The website deal was that I found that investor.gov has been a terrific place for me to learn about basics of markets, to learn about retirement strategies and research, and just how to go about setting up and growing our money. And the other one is arp.org/WI, which is aarp.org/WI. And that, of course, is the ARP website in Wisconsin. That really does help a lot, too. What I've discovered, and I love the quote your guest had about ignorance. Ignorance is really dangerous when it comes to investing and money management. And I started about 10 years ago, which was 5 years before I retired, studying and learning a little bit. And really, those first 5 years were so frustrating. But once I got over the hump of using these websites and other people answered questions for me and financial advisors, it really has worked out great to navigate through the market during these turbulent last 4 years. And one of the questions I had about things in general was, we just have Roth IRAs in our family, and I wondered, in people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, is there an advantage to not having just Roths? Is it better to have both types of IRA?
Well, let me say about your first point, congratulations. It sounds like those are great resources. And yes, ignorance in finance is extremely expensive, but it sounds like you're on the right track. I might modestly suggest that our website is pretty good, and we've got a free book there that I wrote a number of years ago that's been downloaded about 7 million times, called Investment Strategies for the 21st Century, and that might be something you want to peruse. On the second question about Roth IRAs, the big advantage to a Roth is that money coming out is tax-free, but money going in is not tax-deductible, as opposed to a regular IRA. The biggest consideration to determine whether you want to do Roth or regular is whether you feel like your tax bracket after retirement is going to be higher or lower. If it's going to be higher or the same, then if it's the same, then it doesn't make any difference. If it's going to be lower after retirement, then you want to get the deduction currently. And if it's going to be higher after retirement, then you're better off to have the money in the Roth. So that, let's say you're 20 years old, just starting out, and the value of your tax deduction, if you did a regular IRA, is close to zero. Well, you might as well do the Roth, because you're not giving up any very much in the way of tax deductions. But if you're a neurosurgeon at age 50, who expects to retire at substantially less than he's making now in a lower tax bracket, then the current tax deduction is more valuable than the free income later. And that's the biggest trade-off you have to evaluate. And some people will say, well, I don't know what my income is going to be later, and I don't know what my tax bracket is going to be later, because the government may change the rules. And so I'll do both. I'll just diversify that risk.
There you go.
Maybe that was no help at all.
No, I think it was. Not. David, thank you.
That's an interesting consideration. So if our tax bracket stayed the same and our retirement income was very similar to our working years income, it sounds like choosing Roths is the way to go.
No, if it's the same, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
But if it's higher after retirement, then you'd want to do the Roth. If it's going to be lower, then you want to do the regular.
Yep.
Okay.
A little bit of figuring to do there. But you're on the right track, David. Thanks a lot for calling.
It sounds like you're thinking it through, and there's nothing, believe me, there's nothing wrong with a Roth.
Deb in Plymouth emailed us, my husband and I retired early with pensions. We also have substantial amounts in 401b accounts. Then we have $50,000 liquid money, about $20,000 we put into a Roth IRA and $10,000 in another IRA. We're both working part-time, wondering how long we should continue putting money into our Roth IRA. And of course, and you kind of just answered that question.
Well, it, you know, it's a great way to save. It's a better way to save than just putting it in the bank account.
Yeah.
You know, because you do get a big tax advantage out of it. You know, determine whether you want the Roth or the regular. If you're working part-time and your income is low, then the Roth is the way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. We have Michael and Jackson next. Michael, hi.
Guys.
Yeah,
how
thanks
are you
for
today?
Great, thanks for calling.
Wonderful. My question is, what is the difference between qualified and non-qualified investments? And if I may, let me try to set the table. I'm 50, she's 47, we have no children. Our gross is 110,000, give or take. Currently, we have about 350,000 or 80% in qualified savings that are like simple and 403Bs, and then about 70,000 or right around 20% in individual IRAs or IRAs, and then maybe about 60 grand worth of cash in some insurance policies. And, you know, is that, should we be trimming the 19% of our monies that we're contributing to these qualified plans and doing something different outside of where we're working?
Hmm.
Depends. First, you have to evaluate the qualified plan, because let's say in the worst case that they're taking out 3%, that the cost is 3% of your total capital every year. Mm-hmm. That's a really bad IRA, very expensive, and no one in their right mind would want to pay 3% overhead to make an investment when you can go to Vanguard and do it for a tenth of a percent. So you know, the value of the qualified plan is, in the case of a regular, it's tax deferral. Someday you're going to have to pay taxes on that money. And the biggest value maybe of a 401k is it systematizes savings for people. And what we know about 401ks, even the bad ones, are that people who have access to a 401k have higher net worth than people who don't, if we look across the entire spectrum. So it does force people to save, and that's a very good thing in this economy. But the value of the tax deferral is probably secondary to that, and if the investment plan is not worth making, then you're probably far better off to buy a family of index funds, because there's not much tax drag on an index fund because the turnover is very little, and so your distributions, your taxable distributions on an annual basis are pretty small. And in growth funds, equity funds, you get the value of capital gains rather than ordinary income. So, you know, it's a personal decision. You'd have to look at your tax brackets. You'd have to look at the quality of the plan. The big thing is that your savings, you're on the right track there. And, you know, it would take a little bit of analysis to determine if it's the most efficient plan for you.
Yeah.
Is there a resource? The bulk of the holding is actually with my wife, and she has a 403B here in the state. And it's going through a Byzantine labyrinth to try to understand some of the quarterly statements that come through.
Yeah,
it is. I believe they're required, just like a 401k, to give you some disclosures as to what the total costs are. And 403Bs, just like 401ks, go from extraordinarily good to awful. And you know, unfortunately, you have to wade through that stuff or find somebody to help you wade through it to determine what the costs and the benefits are.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, I'm down here in Florida. I know almost, well, I know zero about what's available in
Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. And if you look through and study and can't figure it out, Frank, we go to maybe an investment counselor or planner?
You can, and if you're going to do that, I would suggest one that you have some confidence in, who's got the experience, the professional credentials like CPA, or CFP, and the academic degrees, so that you're getting good advice, competent advice, and then you want to look at how they're getting paid. And a fee-only advisor is a lot better than someone who may have a mixed motive about giving you advice because they're going to get higher commissions.
Yeah. So looking at a fee-only person with the right kinds of credentials could, even though the fee might look kind of stiff to begin with, it could in the end it could save a lot of money.
Well, it should save a lot of money. I mean, we typically look at outside accounts at the major brokerage houses, and they're trying to extract somewhere in the neighborhood of 3% per year, and we can do it for less than half of that.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is that our fee is right in your face. We tell you what it is, and you can decide if we're giving you value or not. And the others are hidden, and they may be cumulatively a lot higher. But the other consideration is that a fee-only advisor has got no incentive to sell you high-priced stuff in order to pad his own paycheck.
Yeah, that makes excellent sense. As you always do, Frank.
Well, you're very kind. It's always great to be on your show, Larry, because your listeners have such great questions and you're such a great interviewer, and I hope it's valuable to all your listeners.
Well, it is, Frank. Thank you so much. I look forward to our next visit. Thank you.
I hope so. I look forward to it, too.
Frank Armstrong is a certified financial planner, founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc., author of The Informed Investor, and co-author of Save Your Retirement. We have his website on my Facebook page. If you want to go to there, Investor Solutions, Inc., you can go there, click on it, and he does have a lot, I think something like 500 articles about investing and saving for retirement. So that's a pretty nice thing to have, or to, at least at your disposal, kind of a library to look at. Some of it you will get some use out of, others perhaps not, but it's there. And doesn't cost anything. That's the other good thing. You may have one of the classic gardening books that ever came around. It's called The Garden Primer. It might be on your bookshelf. It's one of those resources that comes in handy whether you've been in the gardening business forever or you're brand new at it. And the author of that was Barbara Damrosch. She wrote that quite a few years ago. Now, she and her husband have a new book out. It's called The Four Season Farm Gardener's Cookbook. Barbara Damrosch and Elliot Coleman, her husband, From the Garden to the Table. So how to garden and then how to prepare what you raise. 120 recipes. All that coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.